You are Locked On Ravens, your daily Baltimore Ravens podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back to another episode of Locked On Ravens. I am your host, Kevin Ostreicher of Ravens Wire. And as per Friday tradition, per Purple Friday edition, Matthew Stevens of Ravens Wire joins me here once again. Matthew, since we last talked, there's been a few Ravens signings, a few more signings around the NFL, and also a bit of drama in Ravens land. How are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good and excited for the drama, excited for the signings, excited for the draft, just excited for all of it right now.
It's going to be a great in this draft coming up. You know, it's going to provide some much needed sports. The people aren't playing on the field, but the next generation of hopefully what will be Ravens greats will be selected in about 3 weeks. But as we get into this, Matthew, we talked about Michael Brockers and what happened to him. But Derek Wolfe, the signing that ends up replacing him, very similar player to Michael Brockers, and they got him at a much cheaper price. When you first heard that the Ravens had sealed the deal with Derek Wolfe, what was your initial reaction there?
Well, the initial reaction is that I think that I actually might be a better signing once everything's all said and done. Of course, Derek Wolfe has some injury concerns, but if he plays a full 16 games and plays at the level he did last year, you know, Baltimore might actually get more out of him than they would have Brockers, and they'll get him for a relative bargain, you know, barring whatever the incentives are. Even at the top, it's $6 million for this year. And I got to imagine a lot of those are tied to both playing time and sacks and probably quarterback pressures as well.
Yeah, I think so too. And just the contract language, the amount that they were able to get him for, and it's not just for this year either. Yes, if you have to pay him the full $6 million this year, all right, then you have to pay him that full $6 million. But then going into 2021, 2022, that's as much as $24 million that Baltimore saves. When you look at Michael Brockers and you look at Derek Wolfe, what's kind of similar about their play styles, and then what's a little bit different?
Well, I think the big thing that you have to look at with Derek Wolfe is that he's a solid run defender, maybe not as good as Michael Brockers is, but he offers far more upside as a pass rusher. I mean, 7 sacks over 12 games last year, 18 quarterback pressures again over those 12 games. So I think a little bit more on the upside of that when it comes to being able to pressure the quarterback. I also think Derek Wolfe kind of fits as an option you could slide all over the defensive line, really giving you maximizing those matchups you could potentially create. And I think that's exciting. I think when you're looking at a defensive coordinator like Don Martindale, who likes to mix things up, who likes to maybe pull guys out of position to confuse an opponent or send pressure from unique areas, having a guy that's more versatile certainly helps. Now, the flip side of that is I think, you know, Michael Brockers, a little bit more heft, a little bit more ability to clog things up in the middle versus Derek Wolfe, but I think you're not going to lose a lot in that regard from Derek Wolfe over to Michael Brockers or even Michael Pierce from last year.
And talking about, I mentioned the salary cap implications for 2 years down the line. I mean, just how important is it for Baltimore to have that money in their back pocket? It was a $12 million cap hit in 2021, and then they probably could have gotten out of the deal in 2022. But just how important is it for Baltimore to have those extra funds now?
It would be nice to have a defensive tackle kind of sign for the long term. I mean, when you look at Baltimore's defensive front, you know, about half of their guys are only signed through the 2020 season, and then the rest of them are only signed through 2021. So, you know, Baltimore really is going to have to look in this draft and next draft specifically, look at defensive tackle, look at defensive end in order to get the next round of guys up there. So having Brockers maybe signed for 2 out of those 3 years would have been better long term, but it also, again, just like with everything else, it provides Baltimore more flexibility so they can go after the guys that they want while still having the need filled this year. Then they can still go ahead and attack the draft how they want to, or maybe try to get a guy who is on the come up but just maybe not all the way there in free agency and save a little bit of money long term. So it'll all depend on how things kind of shake out after the draft, after the draft in free agency, and then next offseason, really, with how Baltimore is able to replenish their defensive line. But having more money never hurts anything in football, especially for a team as competent as Baltimore has been over the last, 25 years, and now second offseason under Eric DaCosta. I trust them to be able to turn that extra cap space into positive moves down the line.
Yeah, I think so, too. And we also talked about, as you kind of mentioned, the ability for Baltimore to kind of do what they want in the draft instead of having to be tied down to one position or kind of force a player who might not be the best player available. We talked about how, at least last week we did, how the Ravens might have had to push that defensive lineman list up on their draft needs list. With the addition of Derek Wolfe, do you still see Baltimore trying to come out with a defensive tackle maybe in the first 3-4 rounds? Do you think they trying to prioritize another position of need, such as inside linebacker or interior offensive line, with the addition of Wolf?
Like I mentioned before, it gives them flexibility more than anything else. If a defensive tackle falls to them and they like that guy and it's the best guy on the board, they'll absolutely take him in round one. I don't doubt that. Or round two or round three or round four, they're going to take the guy that looks best on their board for where they're at. So, but that's kind of the plus side of signing Derek Wolfe for a year is the fact that, again, you feel that need. You don't have to worry about it right now. And that gives you the chance to be able to go out and get the guys you want without having to reach, without having to overpay for a guy in free agency, without having to move around in the first round or second round of the draft in order to get a guy that could potentially start or make an impact this year. It allows you to kind of just relax a little bit. And when Baltimore is relaxed, especially when it comes to the draft, that's when they tend to make their best moves. That's when they get guys like Ed Reed. That's when they get guys like Marlon Humphrey. They tend to make the best decisions when they don't have to reach for anything. And they can either trade back or just let a guy drop right to them.
Yeah, and that's one of the beauties of just having so much depth along the whole entire roster, so you're not overstacked at one position, but you have nothing at the other. The Ravens balance it out pretty well. But Matthew, going back into what you were kind of talking about a little bit earlier with the Ravens and their age on the defensive line, not having those guys signed, how concerned are you about that when it comes to maybe drafting someone, when it comes to how old they are? Does that concern you at all?
It does. I mean, I think any of the good teams aren't looking at just this year. At this point, they're probably already past what this year is going to do for them. The guys that they already have on the roster is pretty much the guys they're already going to have on the roster, minus maybe some post-draft free agents, and maybe you hope that a draft pick or two pans out early and you're able to get some really some upside from them in their first year. But the reality is at this point, you're looking at next year already. You're already going, look, what guys am I going to draft now that are going to potentially start next year? And when you look at Baltimore's roster, they have a few positions like that. Defensive line is certainly one of them. Safety is another one where you look in a year or two and you go, okay, these are some moves we can make. We can cut these guys in order to save this cash. We can maybe extend this guy in order to do this. Here's what we can do, and here's what we're ultimately going to need. Here are the positions that we know we're going to need to stack talent at. And I think for the defensive line, all up and down the defensive line, that's one of those positions that, that they're going to have to do that. But does it concern me? No, not really. But it does at the same time. It would be nice to have all these guys signed long term so you know what you've got. But Baltimore's set up for another year or two at the very least when it comes to that stuff without having to make any drastic moves. Again, unless a guy kind of falls to him in the draft, or if a free agent just so happens to open up and, hey, we think you're a great fit here for the long term. That again gives them that flexibility to be able to do that. So to answer your question, both yes and no, which isn't really an answer.
It's something, though. And looking at guys who the Ravens have re-signed, and it's only for this year, they're on one-year deals, Jihad Ward and Justin Ellis. Now, their playing time might be a little bit scarce here and there sometimes with the amount of depth the Ravens have on the defensive line for the next at least 2 years and this year also. How do you see Jihad Ward and Justin Ellis factoring into this defensive line rotation?
Well, Justin Ellis is the big meat in the middle. I mean, he's the kind of replacement for Michael Pierce as just a he's going to grow roots into the turf, and he's just a big boy. He's tough to move. And running up the middle against those power backs, that's the guy you kind of want in there a little bit more often, simply so that way you have to force a guard and a center potentially to both have to double team him, which again just frees up your linebackers to do more stuff. It that's kind of what that role is ultimately going to be for Justin Ellis, and just additional depth along with maybe Daylon Mack as well, kind of as those two just space eating big boys. Jihad Ward is kind of your almost like Calais Campbell to a certain degree. He's big, but he's not big. He's not beefy. He's tall. He's athletic. He's able to, you know, put his hand in the dirt and rush from the edge that way. He's able to defend the edge as a run defender in the flats. He's also able to, you know, pull out to outside linebacker and kind of fill a little bit of that role as well. So Jihad Ward, again, is another one of those guys that Baltimore is going to slide all over the place depending on what matchups the offense is giving him and maybe where injuries are at and things like that. So he's just a chess piece that you get a chance to move around all around the up front, kind of like how Chuck Clark and Anthony Levine play on the back end, where they'll be at cornerback, they'll be at safety, they'll be at linebacker. They're going to play a bunch of different positions. So Jihad Ward's kind of that guy for your front seven.
Yeah, a lot of depth and a lot of versatility along that Ravens defensive line, but we're going to head to our first break here. When we return, we're going to be getting into some more free agency talk, so stay tuned and we will be back soon. Welcome back to the second segment of this Purple Friday Locked on Ravens edition. Kevin Ostreicher still here with Matthew Stevens. And Matthew, there are two names that just seem to be linked to Baltimore by a lot of fans. And it's caused a decent amount of drama, whether it be on the Twitter waves or through whatever other social media. So we'll start with one. And the name Antonio Brown. And he's a guy who's had a very troubled past over the last few years, and there have been a lot of fans clamoring to sign him. And the video of him and Marquise Brown and Lamar Jackson working out in Florida, that certainly added fuel to that fire. Starting off with the question here, Matthew, would Antonio Brown be a good fit on the Baltimore Ravens?
I mean, the obvious answer to that is no. From a personality standpoint, no, he would be an awful fit. There's a reason why he played for, you know, three teams or was on three rosters last season. It's because, well, he's not a good personality fit. Bruce Arians over in Tampa Bay was like, nope, no way. We're good. We've got all the wide receivers we need. The reason why you're saying that around the league is because, well, Antonio Brown has had a lot of dust-ups over just the last year when it comes to off-the-field incidents and some of the things that have gone on there. From a player standpoint, if you're strictly looking at football, if you're strictly just watching game film and you're able to ignore everything else, which football fans are able to do, general managers and owners absolutely do not do. And we were talking about this beforehand. There are guys in this draft that will absolutely not be on Baltimore's board at all. Doesn't matter how talented they are. Doesn't matter what value they could be. You could get a first-round guy or a guy that has a first-round tag on him. You can get him in the sixth round. Baltimore is not even going to talk about it. Just doesn't exist. Antonio Brown, in my mind, is kind of one of those guys. But if he's able to get his head right, if he's able to quiet down and be humble and be contrite and really work his butt off, which he's been able to do before, you know, Antonio Brown is one of the best wide receivers in the game. I mean, bar none. I don't think anyone's going to question that. The problem with that is with like so many players that have jettisoned themselves from this league, can you balance the how to say it nicely, the crazy with the talent? And for Baltimore, ever really since Ray Rice, they have, if you show a little bit of crazy, if you show a little bit of you're going to be a problem, a locker room disturbance, a PR nightmare, they don't care how talented you are, you're probably not going to be on this team. So for Ravens fans out there, I wouldn't hold my breath. But at the same time, if Baltimore does make that move, I would trust them to have done so much homework and talk to literally everyone Antonio Brown's probably ever shaken hands with or been around in order to get a good picture of where he's at now and where he's probably going to be in 6 months, 8 months, a year, 2 years.
Yeah, and talking about what Antonio Brown will bring to the team, you know, from a football perspective, he's obviously going to be one of the best receivers in the game, but it's kind of hard to imagine him not getting handed down some suspension, right?
Yeah, I mean, certainly fans have argued with me about this already, but, you know, he's quote-unquote under investigation by the league. He's not on the commissioner's exempt list at this point, and that's primarily from what I understand because, well, nobody signed him, so there's no reason for the NFL to kind of slap down an official punishment on him yet. But that if a team does sign him, the reality is he's going to be suspended. The question is how long? And when you factor in his recent arrest for burglary and battery, when you factor in the sexual assault accusations and lawsuits, when you factor in just all the Twitter nonsense, all the cursing at cops on his front lawn, the doing all this stuff in front of his kids and his baby mama, and just all of that, the NFL has routinely taken those guys and go, you're going to be suspended. You're not going to get time on the field. Again, with Antonio Brown, do you factor all those in? How much does that all equal in terms of a suspension? How much of it is maybe a suspension? How much of it is maybe a fine on top of that? What do you do there? I don't think that's a question. I think that's a question that the NFL doesn't necessarily have the answer to either, which again is why they kind of have him quote unquote under investigation. But he's going to be suspended. I mean, if he doesn't, I would be beyond shocked. If Antonio Brown gets away with no suspension at all. And the fact is that even if he does get signed, the upper end of that is he might not play in 2020 at all. Even if he is signed on a roster, I could absolutely see the league going, look, here's like six things you did, dude. We got to suspend you for a year. Just from a, we have to make that message clear to everyone else that you can't go doing all this stuff, regardless of how talented you are. You cannot do that and then proceed to get on a team. What that eventually means, again, is I'm not entirely sure, but a suspension seems almost inevitable.
Yeah, I think it would be interesting if Antonio Brown did not get a suspension. I fully see it happening as well. But moving on to someone who doesn't have the off-the-field troubles that Antonio Brown has, someone who's still a free agent, one of the top ones at that, Jadeveon Clowney. Rumors have been that he's dropped his asking price down from $20 million to around the $17 to $18 million range. Teams like the Seahawks and the Titans are still interested. But, of course, the Ravens Twitter family has been clamoring for Jadeveon Clowney, you know, and that would have to be at the expense of Matthew Judon, most likely, paying Jadeveon Clowney that type of money. Do you see it as a realistic fit for the Ravens to bring Jadeveon Clowney onto their roster the way it's shaped right now?
Not really. And I know a lot of fans want Baltimore to sign Clowney and then try to trade Matthew Judon. While I think that was something that I had in my mind early this offseason, was potentially they find a guy or two to replace Judon if they can get good value in a trade from him. If they haven't already done that, we're kind of past that point of getting guys that are going to make sense. If you're going to get rid of Matthew Judon, it's because you're signing Jadeveon Clowney for probably the same amount of money. I don't know why Baltimore would do that. They know Judon. They know what he brings. They know what he is in the locker room. They know what he is off the field. The other players know him well. Just he represents a lot of things that they already know about him. Whereas Clowney, who arguably is a better player in some facets, even if you were to say he's absolutely a better player, he's an unknown. You don't know what he brings to the locker room. You don't know what headaches are going to potentially be there. And from a more depressing standpoint in this, we don't know what the pandemic, the coronavirus pandemic, is going to do ultimately to the season. These guys might be getting on the field for week one with very little training camp, with very little practice time, with very little time around a playbook. You don't want to have to try to teach your top pass rusher what you do and what your defense is and how you drop back in coverage and where we're going to do this and what are these five guys around you going to do. You don't want to have to do that on what could be only a few weeks of time with the team. That would be setting yourself up for failure. So everything really does point to Clowney going somewhere else, and for probably a lot less money than he was expecting, probably on a one-year deal, so that way he could hit free agency at 28 years old and hopefully a better market that is willing to pay him long-term. But I don't see it happening here with Baltimore, again, especially with the concept that they'd have to get rid of Matthew Judon, or they'd have to sign an extension with Judon beforehand in order to free up some cap space, or with Stanley or Humphrey in order to do those things. So many other things need to happen before Clowney could even be talked about realistically as being signed. And Baltimore just doesn't seem to be gearing up for that at all.
And it seems like Clowney and Judon's names have been linked together, whether it be sign one, trade the other, or have them both on the roster. But I saw that you mentioned a pretty good point, and I saw that you put on Twitter the fact that if Jadeveon Clowney gets, you know, a deal that's a little bit lower than what he was expecting, you know, how much do you expect that to impact Matthew Judon and the contract that he ultimately gets?
Well, it should. I mean, when you're looking at comparable contracts, it's going to be what Clowney signs this year. Just like Clowney, Matthew Judon isn't necessarily a 15-sack guy. He's never been that throughout his career, but he's been, you know, kind of perennially right around the 8, 9, 10-sack region, which, again, just like Clowney. But Judon is more of a all-around linebacker. He's a guy that defends the run well. He's a guy that defends the flats well. You can move him around. Again, just like Clowney, not necessarily a special pass rusher, but a guy that you could do a lot of different things with, and is a three-down outside linebacker. The problem with that, as Clowney's finding now, that doesn't pay as well as 15 sacks, 20 sacks does. Sadly, that's the case. So for Baltimore, they're just sitting there at this point folding their arms and going, look, Clowney thought he could get $20 million. I don't know what Matthew Judon was asking for, but my guess is it was probably in that ballpark. And they just pointed to Clowney and went, look, he's not getting it. I mean, do you think you're going to get it? If we were to cut you right now, do you think you're going to sign a deal for $20 million? Probably not. So why don't you stick with us, stick with a team that you know, stick with a team that's going to give you some cash and take care of you, and we'll pay you whatever Clowney's going to get paid. We'll pay you that over long term.
Yeah, that might be his best bet at this point, because the market for Clowney, you mentioned, it's going down, and who knows when it's going to stop. It's most likely going to be a one-year deal. So interesting to see how the Clowney market's going to end up affecting the Matthew Judon market. But we're going to head into our final break now when we return. More draft talk here on Locked On Ravens, so stay tuned, and we will be right back. Welcome back to the final segment of this Locked On Ravens Purple Friday episode. Kevin Ostreicher still hanging here with Matthew Stevens. And Matthew, the draft, it's so close. We're so close to being able to grasp and look at the next great generation, hopefully, of Ravens players, but not mentioned in the Marquise Brown in Lamar Jackson and Antonio Brown video. Jerry Jeudy was also there working out with them as well. What would a player like a Jerry Jeudy, a Henry Ruggs, a CeeDee Lamb mean for the Baltimore Ravens on offense if they were able to snag one?
Man, that would be exciting. Baltimore has never really had a number one wide receiver before. You know, you could look at Anquan Boldin, more of a possession receiver. He was going to win more underneath and to the outside than he was over the top. So kind of a little bit limited when Baltimore got a hold of him. Derek Mason, again, kind of similar type of overall use. Steve Smith, again, very similar overall. Baltimore's had a bunch of really good guys, but they've never had that Julio Jones. They've never had that Antonio Brown or that DeAndre Hopkins type of a guy. With Ruggs, with Jeudy, those are the types of guys where, man, you really could have a true quote-unquote number one wide receiver. And for me, what a number one wide receiver is a guy that wins across the board. You can line him up in the slot. You can line him up outside. He's going to be able to beat you underneath. He's going to be able to beat you on quick slants, on outside runs. He's going to be able to get you over the top. He's going to be able to do a lot of different things and really beat everyone most of the time. That's a number one wide receiver for me. So there's not a lot of them in this league, in my opinion. Baltimore would have a chance to get that. And when you combine that with just the ridiculous speed of Marquise Brown and what he might become in the future, that's a scary tandem when you also consider Miles Boykin, a big-bodied guy underneath, maybe as your possession guy, Willie Snead going ahead and running around in the middle as your speed slot guy. A lot of those things, really start to line up for Baltimore. And that offense, which was already just going to smother you with the run, can now really start to attack through the air in a way that they couldn't last season. And keep in mind, Lamar Jackson threw the most passing touchdowns in the league last year at 36. So if they can get even better from that, oh, this is an offense that really should contend for a top five unit every single year for the next handful of years.
Yeah, and pairing that with the defense they're trying to build and pretty successfully have built with the pass rush, with the secondary, now all they need is a middle linebacker. But Matthew, with the depth that this wide receiver class has, how likely is it that Baltimore might sacrifice some of that draft capital to go up and take one of those top three, as opposed to maybe waiting and picking a Justin Jefferson at 28 if he's there, or picking a Brandon Ayuk, T. Higgins in the second round? How likely is it they would maybe spend that draft capital to move up to 13 or 11?
I'd say it's pretty unrealistic. That being said, we're kind of in unprecedented times for Baltimore, especially. They've got DaCosta at the GM position. He's been a little bit more aggressive than Ozzie Newsome has been in the past when it comes to both trades, when it comes to going after guys in free agency, when it comes to just managing his own roster. DaCosta's tend to has had a no BS attitude. He gets the guy that he wants to get, has backup plans, but gets the guy that ultimately he wants to get and is able to go ahead and pull off some pretty cool moves. So while I think it's unrealistic or unlikely, if you go by Baltimore's history, that kind of comes with an asterisk when it comes to the fact that, again, DaCosta is an unknown here. We don't really know what he's going to do. And with Baltimore being so close to a Super Bowl and in that Super Bowl window, if he's in love with a guy like Henry Ruggs, if he's in love with a guy like Jerry Jeudy or you know, any other player, and he doesn't feel like he's going to be there, man, I could absolutely see him going up and getting that guy, especially if he starts to fall down, maybe starts to creep toward 20. Maybe that's the time you start seeing Baltimore go, hey, it's not going to cost us our entire draft to move up. It'll cost us a lot, but we're going to get a guy that we know is going to be an impact star player, Pro Bowl type of guy, day one. And if Baltimore feels confident in that, I have no doubt that Eric DaCosta would jump on that. The question is now, does he feel like any of these players are like that? Or does he feel like, you know, the difference between a Henry Ruggs and Jerry Jeudy to a CeeDee Lamb or a Mims isn't that far off? And you know what? We'll just wait until the second round when another guy falls into our lap. That's, I think, is the question there when it comes to a handful of positions. But it will certainly be interesting. And you know I'll have a draft ready just in case up on the site. Ready just in case Baltimore decides to move up and grab a guy that they love.
Yeah, of course. You have to be ready at all hours of that draft if you're covering the Baltimore Ravens, because truly anything could happen. But moving on to a different position, something that seems to be, you know, the final piece of the puzzle for that defense, which is the middle linebacker position. It seems like Baltimore couldn't find someone on the market they were completely interested in or couldn't come to a money agreement with. So they're looking towards the draft. And I'd be very surprised if they didn't come out with at least one middle linebacker to kind of cement their status as, you know, an all-around great defense. What do you think Baltimore's plan is in the draft when it comes to the middle linebacker position?
Well, just like so much, you know, other stuff that we've talked about so far with the draft, Baltimore's going to let the board come to them. I think that being said, Baltimore's going to have to make a move probably in the first three rounds to get a guy that can be a starter. And there's a handful of those options, you know, a guy like Troy Dye, Harrison, obviously Patrick Queen and Kenneth Murray. Those guys are guys that have been routinely talked about around Baltimore in the first two or three rounds. But I don't think they're necessarily going to have to if they see a Kenneth Murray or a Patrick Queen go off at 18 or something like that. I don't think they're going to necessarily feel the pressure to go, oh man, we need to get up there now and grab the other guy before they're gone. That might happen in the second round. That might happen in the third round. If a guy drops down there that Baltimore really likes, but they don't necessarily have to feel that pressure or have to give away their entire draft in order to get that type of a guy. My guess is they're going to add one guy here early on in the first three rounds, and then somebody's going to come free after the draft in free agency that isn't going to count against their comp picks and is going to be relatively affordable. and more importantly, is going to bring that experience that Baltimore really loves to have at inside linebacker. That would be my guess on how they're going to handle it overall.
Yeah, I think that's a good hypothesis as to what Baltimore is going to do with that middle linebacker. It seems like the one guy, the last final piece, is that middle linebacker. Baltimore doesn't have to rely on their inside linebackers too much, or at least not as much as other teams, because of the presence of Chuck Clark, who comes down and plays that inside linebacker position. Jimmy Smith said that he could potentially see himself taking over Brandon Carr maybe as that high safety while Chuck Clark goes in and plays that dime linebacker role. But overall, Baltimore, I think, does need somebody who can step in there and play at least at the Mike position for a little bit. But finally, Matthew, you mentioned a little bit earlier how these teams signing outside guys, it could hinder the ability to kind of get them up to speed and get them familiarized with the playbook. That's the free agents who have had experience within, you know, the NFL game on an NFL field. How concerned are you with that same scenario for NFL rookies this season?
Well, it's a concern, and luckily for Baltimore, largely speaking, they've allowed those guys to kind of come into their own. They very rarely ever pushed rookies, maybe outside of a first-round pick, into the starting lineup before they were ready. You know, again, I go back to Marlon Humphrey, who played, you know, a good number of snaps as a rookie, but they allowed him to come up. They allowed him to go ahead and learn. They allowed him to get his feet wet on the field without necessarily having to throw him into the fire. Now, a lot of that's because Baltimore has so much depth at so many positions. So, you know, some of this might be different for some positions. Again, inside linebacker is one of those. But largely speaking, Baltimore is going to be able to give those guys some time to get acclimated, which is why I think they tried to really figure out the defensive line, and so they were able to trade and sign Calais Campbell, take care of some of those key positions that they needed to, and again, mostly bring back their own guys in free agency. I think that's why they did it, but it's going to be hard for these guys to be prepared. I mean, as of right now, as we saw with Chuck Clark and Mark Andrews, who talked a little bit about trying to just stay in shape and do workouts and stuff without being able to go to a gym, without necessarily being able to go to trainers and specialists and stuff like that. It's tough. It's tough. And that's going to be the case for guys that are in the draft. Those guys aren't going to be able to have practiced as much or as worked out as much. So they might not be at 100% physically like they would have had everything been normal. And that's before you even get to the idea of the playbook and meaningful snaps in training camp and coaching one-on-one and the rookie mini camp. I mean, all of those things realistically could not happen this year, and they could be thrust onto the field week one against a team. So it is a concern, but luckily I think Baltimore is shielded from that by just being so deep in so many positions.
Yeah, it's really such a blessing to have all that depth, because you're right, especially at a time like this where rookies might not be as familiar as the playbook, you know, actually being in there with the coaches, being in there with the veterans, it helps to a degree that some people don't understand. You know, the rookies, they'll be excited, they'll jump all over the playbook at home most likely, but it's just being with the coaches, being able to ask questions, and I'm sure the teams will try to do FaceTime, Zoom, Skype, whatever they choose to help those rookies out, but it's just different, you know, being on the football field. So you're right, Baltimore's done a really good job of making sure their rookies don't feel rushed in or able to kind of come into their own. But Matthew, that's all I have for you today. Thank you once again for coming on the show. In 1 week closer to the draft, we will be when we talk again next week.
Absolutely. And again, as we get closer and closer to it, just going to be more and more excited for it. This is going to be, while nothing else is going on especially, this is going to be kind of a fun time for Ravens fans as they start maybe hopefully adding the final piece or two that they need to this team to go ahead and bring up another Super Bowl ring.
Yeah, exactly. A much needed injection of sports. We're going to take a 2-day hiatus here on Locked On Ravens. And when we return, another mock draft Monday will be coming your way. So stay tuned for that. And I will see you on Monday.